All right, well, it's 2:30. We're going to try to set a record this month.
Start on time?
Let's start on time. First, I want to acknowledge, glad to have Ms. Mercalli here and our two new counselors as well. Thanks for coming, Mr. Bolton. Let's start off with introductions. Go ahead, Don.
Don Hardy with Berkshire Hathaway.
Steve Bacon, Parkridge and Wastewater.
Gaither, Gaither Holmes.
Mike Odrin, Olson Engineering.
Jeff Riston, Moss Riston.
Jamie Housley, Jordan Ramis.
Andrew Gunther with PLS Engineering.
Greg Schaefer, Development Engineering Division Manager.
Rosie Shaw, Development Engineering.
Mark McCauley, Acting County Manager.
Julie Olson, Clark County Council.
Mark Hope, Clark County Council.
Nikki Olson, Development Inspection, Senior Engineer.
Dean Shaggs, Public Works, Construction Inspection.
Go ahead, Ali.
Ali Sakai, Development Engineering, Public Works.
Great. Next course action, just a reminder that the meetings are recorded and posted on the website. So, to note. Let's move on to review and adopt minutes.
I have one correction, Mr. Chair, on page 3. Second full paragraph, starts with Terry Long. Indicated response was that you can have a 4-foot wall on the property line with a 4-foot cyber screen fence on top. I believe that's a 42-inch or 3.5-foot cyber screen fence. I just checked my notes and it looks like that is the situation.
Okay.
Just wanted the minutes to reflect that so it's accurate. Because that's 8 feet total. I don't think that would be okay.
So what's the correction?
The correction is if you have a 4-foot wall on the property line, the highest you could have your fence on top is 42 inches.
42 inches. 3 foot six.
Yes.
You're right. Thanks. Right now.
Right now, yeah.
Or
just for the notes. Just for the notes.
Sure.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move approval of the December 3rd, 2015 minutes with a minor correction noted by Mr. O'Brien.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? All right, great. Thank you. Greg, upcoming events.
Upcoming events, the back page there of your agenda. We have our typical Board of County Councilors work session every Wednesday. Now 9 a.m. and the footnote on that, they at times they are canceled if there's no topic, so you may want to preview the agenda to confirm. Also, the BOCC hearings typically every Tuesday 10 a.m. with the exception of the first Tuesday of the month. Typically that's an evening meeting, 6 p.m. Our last check was Wednesday, January the 13th, is a revisit of the 2016 Comprehensive Plan update. That's listed as 10 a.m. I don't know. That may move to 9 a.m. I don't know if there's an update on that or not. So you may want to be aware of that and confirm the time before you come over. And then the following week, January 19th, 10 a.m. is another is a BOCC hearing on the 2016 Comp Plan update. The Planning Commission work sessions, as we understand it, their session tonight has been canceled and so far not scheduled for January 21st, so more to come on that.
Next, any announcements, team members?
Happy 2016 and welcome to the new county council.
I do have one quick brief announcement, hopefully not a surprise to any, but as a final reminder, tomorrow is the beginning date of the new stormwater ordinance. Our prosecuting attorney's office has been in direct work with the Department of Environmental Services, also Community Development, also Public Works, and they have brought forward a memo here that's meant to be a guideline to applicability. If there's questions on what defines vesting or start of construction, the dates of applicability with the new ordinance. That's the intent there, is to lay that out and hopefully provide at least some initial guidance as you're wading through your projects and sorting that out. So last on that memo are direct contacts in each of those departments if you need some further assistance. So
anyone who has an application in by January 8th, fully complete, is okay?
Can you help us with that, Ali?
January 7th, midnight on
January.
Today.
If it comes in on
the 8th. It says on or after. But
it's my understanding that there are more projects.
Get all lot plans in before the midnight.
Well, I think it has to be fully complete.
Yes.
Today.
Okay. Yeah. Today is the 7th.
Okay. Other than that, you have to be fully complete in terms of engineering and final approval. Is that okay?
It's the preliminary application. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Rosie. Thank you, Public Works, for providing this. This is good.
Yeah, agreed. Can you note that Terry and Eric are here as well?
Okay. To the attendances. Okay.
Andrew?
Yes.
Greg, at the bottom of the first page, the double asterisk mentions or describes contingent investing. So in the past, there's been counties allowed contingent investing, and it does not apply to stormwater regulations.
That's
so
correct.
So does that mean?
That's from DOE.
It is.
Yeah.
It's an environmental regulation. You can't contingent invest environmental.
It is the leverage from the NPDES given. There were never the contingent vesting authorized by the DOE and NPDES given. But they have a fully complete as being they would be, our attorneys don't like the vesting language, if but they must have capability because it has been still water has been ready. Because you know, things change and is really completely there's what hope would be.
Thank you, Holly.
You're welcome.
Any other deep discussion?
How does this apply now to the older stuff? Before we were working under that injunction letter, and we look at number one, final engineering approved before December 28, 2011. So say you were approved back in 2007 and the application is still good. Does that mean that you are following the stormwater from the time it was approved?
That's what I remember.
So there's no more. So if you had one of those old projects and it was caught up in the injunction, that's gone now. So we actually could go back to the old regulations on those?
No, actually there are not four scenarios as you see. As long as you have received your final engineering approval prior to December 28, 2011, you still, to be honest with you, nothing has changed drastically, except that the only surprise is that a lot of people were under the impression that they would get vested in the pre-act if they come in within 6 months of the pre-act. Mm-hmm. That is not the case. The permit requires the fully complete to be used as a date of applicability of the code. That's the only maybe new to some people, new information. There has been some pre-apps that has been done over the past 6 months, and some people were under the impression that they invested under the current code, which is applicable today. But that's not the case. They have to, if they invent to see fully complete with the land use application, they have to go with the code that is applicable to them.
So, Ali, did I understand you correctly? County has no leeway to vary that standard requirement.
That's
a state regulation driven from the county.
And just a side note, not much has changed from the current code.
Yeah.
And the code that is going to be applicable tomorrow, except that the applicant have to discussed the right way of not using building impact development before they move on to the standard, you know, old-fashioned stormwater control. But I thought that really they asking the applicant to show why infiltration is not feasible, why rainwater is not feasible, why pervious pavement is not feasible. So you go through the list. If you can justify why you're not using that, then you're allowed to use retention collected in the right place and the next year. That's the basic difference. Everything else is pretty much the same as what you're used to. Oh, I mean, the code change back in 2009 was huge. I mean, as far as the whole deforested condition, how did you, you know, make your, the size of your ponds almost 3-4 times larger? That was big. But this one, there is not a lot of difference with what we have to do.
So, Ali, from a practical perspective, when these guys go to design, will, how significant is this? You must demonstrate that you cannot go perform these checklist items. Impervious pavement. Impervious pavement, for example.
Yeah. When this came about, the DOB was challenged, and I believe you guys know more about the appeals that, you know, what are you asking us to do? Yeah. And I think there are some more flexibility here in the code to show that.
The standard, again, changed legally to be you have to demonstrate that it's were feasible. Then in the draft and final permit, they changed it to infeasibility, so you have to almost draft up a straw man to knock it down to not use LID. The previous pavement issue, we did make that in court. That's only to be applicable to very, very low volume traffic roads, so it would be a short plat with a few lots or a part of the driveway.
Okay.
So it wouldn't be applicable. It wouldn't be applicable to more heavily traveled subdivisions.
Is this the definition?
I'm sure.
I was curious for county was taking.
Well, it depends on if it would be dedicated road or
not. But if it is a dedicated road, the county has taken over maintenance of pervious, just curious.
That would be my assumption.
Yes, actually we have like about 3-4 subdivisions that have been approved with pervious pavement, and they are probably whether we like
well, that's what I'm wondering.
Have to maintain.
It's really modern.
Who determines what's feasible? What is that definition? The local agency.
Well,
I mean, is it definitions from the state, or is it county interpretation, or agency, permitting agency determination?
So, again, the county operates under a permit that has been approved by the state, and now they have their own stormwater manual, which is a nice thing. It's the first time the county's ever heard that. I think that there's criteria within the manual and the permit to specify how you meet the whether it's feasible or not. Fortunately, economics is not a justification to get out of it. So you have to look at soil conditions,
technical constraints.
Slope is a big thing.
Infiltration, like for example, if you have a flat soil for infiltration, that's a justification not being carried this way.
So if we remember that discussion last month from the wind model and the soil, that's why that's so important, because that helps us kick some areas out.
So I understood on the short plat that we will have pervious that will need to be done on that kind of road section. Within the project sidewalks, is there anything else that has to be pervious?
Nothing has to be pervious.
Okay.
There's multiple ways to meet the standards. So one thing I think DOE did much better this time than last time is they have, you know, two things. One, they have infeasibility criteria to show that, well, it doesn't make sense, you don't have to do it. The other piece they have this time is a performance standard. So you can either go through the checklist to show you have to go through this, or you don't have to go through any of those checklists, as long as you can meet the model using other tools. So it's the same thing. If you have a site that has decent infiltration, then and you can meet it for the larger storms, you're definitely going to meet it for the small storms. Where we get into a little difference is where you can't meet it for the larger ones, but you could still meet it for the smaller ones. You might be putting in some infiltration or biotension or pervious pavement to get rid of those small storms that we didn't regulate previously. So we used to look at a certain storm basically half to 6 months to 50 years. Now we're looking at these tiny triple storms where it just kind of drizzles. Now those are regulated. So now we're matching a performance criteria for those. So if you can get rid of those and don't have a discharge, you can match the flow standard on those, then that's the LIV portion of it. So that's where that feasibility criteria is. Above for the larger storms, it's really regulated almost the same as we used to. Okay. It's just for the small storms now. It's an addition for regulating those as well.
And I apologize for restating it, but I know that there was information provided in regards to going away from a forested condition and showing, and I thought that was trying to be done with in conjunction with this update. Is that something separate from this, or in regards to going into forced condition, or am I completely
separate?
Okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to point out, I just wanted to recognize staff for working closely with applicants where they were on the cusp of that. Ali, thank you.
Thank you. There has been a lot of people including some of these folks that have been involved either in the stakeholder and advisory or technical advisory group. A lot of input from the consultant and citizens and this over the 2 year period since 2018. I'm a small little part.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Ali, also thanks for your clarification and discussion on this.
Yeah, this is very helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Any other deep announcements? All right, seeing none, let's move on to my favorite part of this agenda. It is time for the election of new officers for this year. So, revisiting last year, we elected Don Hardy as our vice chair. And historically, we have elevated that person to the chair at this point in time. So, if there's any discussion on that, otherwise, I think that would be.
Mr. Chair, I nominate Don Hardy for chair. Okay.
Good. I guess we'll move through the chair. We'll go ahead and move on to a vice chair. So, yes, Don, I assume you don't have any reservations about that.
No, not at all.
Okay, good.
I do have an idea for a vice, though.
It's whoever's on. Yeah. Okay. I just knew the numbers were below.
So, we've got a move in a second to elect Don as chair. Any discussion? All right, let's go ahead and vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? All right. Great. Don, welcome to the chair position.
So that starts officially next meeting.
Now.
Last year.
Yeah, it's actually
going to start now.
And technically, what you should do now is take his position and you should lead for nomination of the vice chair.
I'd happily shift chairs with
okay.
I'll see you later on.
I have a feeling that turned out better than Andrew thought.
Okay, I've got the power now. I'm the only one to get applause.
For the hard work that we're doing
here. Yeah, thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
Yeah, wonderful job.
Good job.
Andrew, thank you. So, good learning from watching you for the last year. So, for vice chair, nominations for vice chair.
Okay.
I'll move my dear friend, Mr. Wisman.
I'll suck that out.
Was that moved and seconded?
Yes.
I heard that if you've been on planning commission and served as an officer in planning commission, you can't serve as an officer in DEEP.
How much is he paying?
Or maybe actually that's a requisite. You have to have been on the planning commission and serve.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Congratulations.
Good board, Joe.
2017. Good year. I'm thinking all of us should file this year.
No, I absolutely do. I think there's a. It's going to build. So the next item on the agenda is review of the annual report for 2016-2017 with the work plan. And I can start going through this, Andrew. I don't know if you had thoughts on that or.
Yeah, I don't mind taking the lead on this, certainly with a lot of help from Mike. Put this together and of course we as a group talked about most of this briefly last month at last month's meeting. Mike and I compared notes and kind of put together our work plan, and I worked to put together a summary of last year's accomplishments and things that we went through as well. So sorry, I'm catching up with the organization here.
I think the main thing that's with this versus the ones that we've seen last year, aside from being more specific to last year's, and similar to other annual reports and work plans, is that we broke out the work plan to more action items, and we have a list of action items and we have a list of monitoring items. There are a lot of things that we get updates on from staff and those that are on technical advisory committees. But then there are things that we've actively talked about in our meetings as wanting to actively address. And I think those are the main items there. Correct me if I'm wrong, Andrew, but this is more of a draft for the presentation to the board.
Yeah, our intent here was to kind of work with Mark and Marty, talk about the coming year's work plan. Sort of, there's a couple topics that I'm unsure whether we want to move those forward, keep them on the plan. It's in advance of meeting with the counselors more formally, although we're glad you guys are here today. But that meeting will be coming up. I don't know if we've got that scheduled yet, but soon. So there were a couple items that I wanted to maybe hit on that were. Wanted to figure out whether it was seemingly in the interest of staff to move those forwards, but also to just briefly run through kind of our work plan list.
And maybe this is more, but instead of running through it line item by line item through the whole document, that you review it, we'll maybe come back to it next month or provide some insight, but maybe talk about specifically the action items.
Correct. I think that would be the most of interest, probably, to get feedback from staff today. So that work plan is on the very last page of the packet, if anybody. It's kind of cut and paste into the staff report as well. There's a more consolidated list there. So I'll briefly run through the first half of that is kind of the action items, and then the last half is more ongoing monitoring things that, like the site plan optimization and the short plan optimization process that Jeff worked real hard on last year. So I know, so starting with the action items, I'll run through those quickly and elaborate a little bit on what those topics are. So we've talked about revisiting the SEPA thresholds and exemptions. I know that in the last couple months, Mike, you ran into some challenges over the grading thresholds, and our understanding was the intent was to simplify that process, and it seems like it's gotten sort of
Right.
Unsolicified.
Well, we were presented here by Environmental Services and what was our understanding leaving here and knowing what the new thresholds were coming in. And then once we got that into practice, finding that staff and PA's office had differing opinions about what that all meant. So that's, I think, why it's number one.
And it hinges on the grading piece.
It's
not, it really hinges on the grading.
Yep. Yep.
So not any of the other thresholds.
The only other threshold is the difference between a short plat and a subdivision. Because there's a difference in what we were told at the state level and then what has been implemented on the local level. They saw no difference between subdivisions and short plats, where in the county's interpretation, they are handling those two very differently. So those two pieces.
Yeah. And again, Eric and I worked on that. We were group on that. So.
Yeah.
And just to add one piece here, and maybe this is a discussion item as well, but drilling this down, I thought the intent was kind of to look at it holistically. If you're doing a commercial project, that's the activity under SEPA versus commercial activity and then a grading activity, but essentially, you know, is the commercial activity, I mean, how do you, is it fragmented or should it not be fragmented in terms of the SEPA process? It's a little confusing.
Yeah.
But,
and I don't think it's been helped by the way that the WAC reads. So,
there's more discussion.
Yeah. So this group of topics we want to run through it. Mark and Marty, certainly, we want your input. If they just seem like we're wasting time, we want to try to pare down this list if it needs to be pared down, or make sure that these are good topics so you guys don't have major issues with us pursuing.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So. So the second topic is the engineering and stormwater reviews on single-family residences. I know Eric has brought that up. And it seems like that process, you know, started out, okay, now we've got to do stormwater plans on single-family residences, and it's just snowballing into more and more detail on the single-family residences.
It almost turns into like you're doing a full engineering set now.
Right. The comments that we're getting out of staff are starting to just...
And this is on even on subdivision lots.
This
no,
is just
on tax lots. Rural lots, tax lots.
Yeah.
The subdivision ones are fine.
Yeah.
Those are already have all the details worked out. It's really on the
rural
the
tax.
Rural ones, yeah. Not a tax lot. Yeah. And
legal
little
lots
detail.
Too. Urban legal lots.
Yeah, there are, yeah, you run
yes,
into some
larger
non-subdivision lots.
Non-subdivision lots. Right.
Or subdivision lots that didn't have stormwater. And that was right. So, I think it's a pertinent topic.
We'll have to review that.
Yeah.
And we'll have new requirements coming forward tomorrow.
And I think the new manual actually might work some of that stuff out,
yeah.
But there's interpretations and basically just expectations to the staff and then the applicant and what needs to be done. I know there's been, the counselors wanted to make it easier for single family home people to do it. And staff is used to seeing it a certain way and they need to see it a certain way. So it almost gets where, someone can't do it on their own. For the level of detail they're looking for, it's pretty complicated.
Great. The third item, impact fee deferrals, and I know we ran through some of this over the last year. Jamie, you might be able to chime in. But I know there's some legislative action.
So the county has to take action by September on this. My hope is now with the new board constituted that Marty and I can revive the stuff we've already put a lot of work into.
Yeah.
So that's something that
may
become active, but
there are a couple pieces to it, and I'll add a third that if we decide that 20 is your limit, there's an easier threshold for us to look at. If builders pull more than 20 permits in a year, then we have to consult with the school district and consider their thoughts would take an ordinance change. There are some financial surety issues around collecting impact fees as late as, say, closing. And money people, treasurer types, they get really nervous about saying, your word's good, but it's not good enough for the school districts who need this money. So we have some work to do on this. So those are the two pieces. And then the third, it's my own wrinkle on it, which is I'm hoping to have phase one and phase two of a new permit system that collects, you know, it's the building phase. Phase one is on single family lots and subdivisions. Phase two is on all building. Those rollouts are roughly May and November, so how that folds into a new system remains to be seen. But we, Jamie and I, can partner on how we work through this on collecting at the deferred points of time. And they're like, under the statute, there's three or four different windows of time you can collect. So we'll be bringing something back. We'll work on something and be bringing something back.
Jamie, let me know on that one. I know we talked about bringing Noah and the title. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Fourth item was about the shoreline exemption process and trying to simplify that. Don, you've been instrumental in that.
You know, Marty and Susan and Kevin Tyler and I met, and Susan was going to take a shot at simplifying, as Marty mentioned last time, trying to take a 14-page application form and make it a 2-page for exemptions would be helpful.
And I think she was going to try to finish some initial draft up by the end of the week. So she's going to be looking at some projects that are going to be volunteering moving forward, kind of pilot this with a few applications, and then if with success, we'll put this into practice. So I think this is within a few weeks of kind of pulling the trigger and moving forward on. We just want to pilot it successfully first before we say yes, this is working for everybody.
It's already back on our agenda for next month.
Okay, so, cool.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Cloud alteration process. I know we've hit on that a little bit in terms of trying to identify if there are ways to simplify that, sort of remove some of the required counselor actions, I think, if
right.
I remember right.
And Chris Horn and I have worked on some versions of plat alterations currently, and we have looked at declarations amending a plat, and they go to the board on consent. They don't go back to the hearing examiner and all of that, those gymnastics. But you know, that altering plats is not something benign, so I'll continue to work with Chris on ways of simplifying plat alterations. We have come up with a couple different solutions other than, you know, going back to the drawing board game there, so.
For post-decision reviews, I know, I think, Eric, you were working on some of the post-decision reviews. Do we have that little put down on the list?
That's number 11.
I think it's 11, but I think it's more than just type one, so I think it'd be for any of them.
Right? That was just an example.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Got it, okay.
This one, the next item is the infrastructure percent deduction, how that ties into the comprehensive plan and really affects big picture, I guess, stuff.
But that's all decided, right?
I think the reason we left that on there is if there is an opportunity to bring it back to council.
I think more critically important now that we're going to be operating under the new stormwater permit come midnight, all of us in engineering development world should really be tracking what the percentage is on site. So when the county decides to relook at the plan, either in the near future or longer term future, that we have that data to give the staff.
Well, my recollection could be faulty, but I thought we did that, and
did.
Staff chose a different direction, essentially. It was just a difference in opinion, really, is what it came down to. We, as an advisory board, presented information, and that's what our job is. That's the end of it.
Yeah, I think given where we are in the comp plan process, I think even Councilor Madure's all four and all of his new planning assumptions didn't, the infrastructure percentage wasn't one of those planning assumptions that was changed. So, next go around.
Yeah, maybe something that we
because we're already in a small box trying to get this done by 30 June.
So I think it's just more of a thing for us to track and make sure.
So maybe that's a long-term
deal. It's a long-term deal.
It's a long-term deal, yeah.
Okay.
But not to be cited.
Maybe we move it under the, yeah. We aren't saying we're monitoring.
Yeah. Yeah, good call.
Agreed.
This is an item just continuing to try to look to the county to further the 60-day review process or some expedited process.
Yeah.
I know we've beat on you enough. Probably keep doing that.
Well, I'm your representative in that fight, so we talk about that frequently.
A majority of those site plans are coming forward on 60-day review. I know that we've turned down a couple different applications, and most notably in the Highway 99 area because of the additional work. And you know, the Highway 99 code is not an easy document to read and apply. I mean, well, it has standards that are not—they're unique to Highway 99. So,
one of the area plan requirements.
So, you know, Susan Ellinger with her focus now in managing land use review, it's something that I'll make sure that we continue to work on this effort. And I like how Andrew's called it expedited review rather than 60 days, because sometimes we do 60 day, and knowing that we can't guarantee 60 day, it'll be 65. Okay, 5 days is not
still
a deal killer. But it is help. It does help. So I'll keep my eyes and ears peeled, and we'll work with Susan on this effort.
Does it stay on this list now?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I would say yes.
The next one we're actually is on topic here later today, but the driveway corner lot issue that's come up here in the last 45 days, I guess, Jeff or some of the builders that Jeff works with frequently, so that might move before we know it. But for right now, it's pertinent, I think. Perimeter retaining walls, of course, we know that is in action.
Yep.
I think we're going
to... been ongoing. And that's back on our agenda in February, so...
Yeah, so look forward to trying to bring that home. I think we've made good progress already. So. This is a kind of a broader topic, but just trying to continue to encourage the use of technology to simplify the process, whether it be through inspections or meetings or a variety of ways. I know Mike Wilmar sort of brought that forward there a couple of years ago.
That might get a little more traction with the changeover to the permitted.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that should remain there. So.
Mm-hmm. Stays on this list?
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm waiting for the day when I can have a preamp on my phone. Right?
That'd be cool.
Something said for that.
Yeah. Lofty. Yeah. Lofty goal, James.
Lofty goal.
Where will you be with your cell phone? It's a question.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That's all that lights up. Yeah.
Item 11, the streamlined engineering reviews, I think we've actually already hit on that, but we'll continue to try to identify ways to simplify the process.
Is that especially the same as number 7?
It to some extent is.
It's different insofar as for a while we were able to submit final engineering plans through kind of a pseudo expedited review, particularly with post-decision reviews, where you typically go through a post-decision review and then you submit your final engineering plans with them. What staff was doing at the time worked out real well is that we could submit our final engineering plans, and while it wasn't technically a final engineering review, they would review it as kind of the first review and provide comments at the end of the post-decision review process. So then you only had maybe a very short timeline at the end to wrap up your final engineering.
Got it.
As it is now, we're to understand that if staff does not, engineering staff doesn't need to review final engineering plans for post-decision reviews, they are choosing not to, and that we need to go through the post-decision review process, then they'll review the final engineering plans.
So even if you submit essentially final engineering plans, you're not going to get final engineering level comments.
Staff's allowing plat. How do you put this? But construction plans go through contemporaneously with plats.
Well, that's different.
Point. So I'm wondering what the difference is.
A post-decision review is like a planning review, so it changes the decision. And then, so for engineering, technically, you're approving plans or reviewing plans, and you don't have conditions yet to approve them by. But the city does it for most projects, and they used to do it, you just couldn't get final engineering approval until you had post-decision review.
Right. Gotcha.
Plats a process after those.
Yeah.
But what is tricky about that is that a lot of times that we are challenged by the somebody who has a problem with the project, and they would question, you know, if this is a land use, how can you, just get the fact that you can have the ability to appeal it, and you go on to the next step. So it depends. Sometimes, the post-decision, has critical items in it that we would have a hard time explaining to the people who complain, why aren't you respecting the land use process? Why doesn't you, finish that and have a decision and, start to do the engineering? But as long as we do make decision, if it is not a feasibility issue or we don't see any challenges, we've always been open to do that, what you say, review the final engineering as the plan and provide comments, if there are any, in a form of condition, but it's also a deadline of the final engineering. So we get ahead. But at no point we can approve the final engineering before the post-decision is issued, because that would be not legal.
Sure. I think the way we're looking at it is how much different is it from a standard expedited review? You're still reviewing final plans before you have a decision. With an expedited review, this would be some sort of pseudo-expedited review, except for a post-decision review, which does have a decision. You're just changing an element or several elements of that original decision. Any wholesale changes have to go back through the preliminary review process anyway. So that's not what we're trying to do.
Thank you for saying that.
True.
Item 12, the grading permit process improvements, particularly for early grading permits. I think Eric, you brought that up as well, that there are times where we're pursuing the ability to get some earthwork going when we know that we're going to be knocking on the door of engineering approval soon thereafter. I think we found that process has room for improvement. Is that maybe?
Yeah, it basically goes through several, three sets of reviews on grading permits. So if you've already gone through reviews on the first one, the idea is to get them sooner than later. And a lot of times it's to beat the construction season. A lot of people got caught off guard this year where they have the dirt opened up and it started raining and they got delayed and they have financing and they had to move. So trying to get things moving a little earlier in the summer, get the grading done, stabilized before the rains hit.
Right.
Can make a huge issue, but if it takes three sets of reviews and you basically only get it a week or two before your final engineering approval, it doesn't make a lot of sense. It's not efficient. So trying to figure out a good way to do that between staff and us to be able to get those started quicker.
This was one that certainly I think we were looking for your input on, Mark and Marty. We had sort of had this on the list, but we weren't sure. And that's the topic of accessory dwelling units in rural zones. I don't remember.
Somebody brought it up. We had it on
BIA
generated. Yeah. The Planning Commission in their deliberations of the GMA plan, that they made that as a recommendation as well with the county.
In the Commission on Aging, I think, to address the housing crisis for seniors and whatnot. ask that we do some work on that and maybe allow it in the rural zone. And I know Councilor Madore and Councilor Milkey were big on it. It fell off the plate. The plate was full. And so I believe we'll be bringing that up in the not-too-distant future.
And we'd struggled with it somewhat because it's kind of a policy type.
It is a policy.
It is. It is.
We've historically tried to stay on the fringe of that.
It is right. Significantly affected by the stuff in the comprehensive plan that's going through right now. So kind of our thing was, it's on our list. Let's do this after we figure out our comprehensive plan so we know what the impacts are for that first. So
yeah, and you got to have sidebars on it too, because if it's under, if every parcel out there can have an ADU on it, then how many additional units might you expect be installed or constructed, and what does that do to the rural population, et cetera, et cetera.
Other counties that have accessory dwelling units in the rural area have some sideboards and maybe zoning, you know, under what rural zones do you allow?
Right.
So I think this is something that it can be on the action item, and between now and the end of the comp plan update cycle, which is in 6 months, 7 months, if this doesn't move, then it probably drops down to a monitor item. But I think what I'm hearing is that it's still an action item between now and at least July.
And do you think it's a topic that is appropriate for this group, or should we be more reactive?
Your general assessment, but I would suggest that until the councilors decide which direction they're going to go, this board would really not provide technical input, I don't think. I mean, it's policy.
Well, that's a part of the course. But well, any commission already, as a policy body, they already made that recommendation, so I don't know whether.
What role would we take?
Looking at the code amendment.
Through the technical aspects of it.
Yeah, through the technical code amendment.
Would you be looking at permanent versus temporary, square footage limitations?
Yes.
Permanent with the sideboards, I think.
Any policy that the board adopts or provides direction to without development regulations, it's a policy. So we would have to develop, you know, language around the development code for accessory dwelling units, and that's something that you typically look at. So it would be in keeping with your review of the home business ordinance, a couple other code amendments that you've looked at. So I think this is something that we would bring back to you.
Item 14, road modifications, reviewing whether those are needed or whether there's further improvements that can be made to simplify the process or eliminate those in situations when they're almost always approved or maybe always approved.
Been on our list for a long
time. Yeah.
It's approved. It's just an ongoing.
Yeah. There has been, yeah.
There has been improvement.
We worked through some changes on joint driveways, which were very positive, I think. I know that we run into, it seems like, virtually every rural project, there's a driveway spacing issue.
Yeah.
Virtually every urban project, there's a driveway spacing
issue. Yeah, I guess.
Access onto arterial issue, you know.
So I think it's still a pertinent topic that we can bring forward and try to continue to identify where that can be simplified or try and identify opportunities. So, archaeological review process and timelines. Think that's going to continue to move forward unless the state miraculously finds a way to.
We've kind of.
It's stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Well, yeah, we've had off on again, off again kind of success or trial and error. So this is something that we still struggle with, and I think we've had some recent. I'll use recent within the past 6 months or so. Recent trials where they've been somewhat successful, but this is something we need to continue to work on. It's something that.
And it's primarily a timing.
It's
issue.
A timing issue with notice and review and the State Department of Archaeological and Historic Preservation. So it's not a it's not entirely under our control because of the state agency's review. So something that we can continue to trial and error
brainstorm
on.
Brainstorm some way to improve.
Yeah.
It is seemingly tough to deal with.
Just find sites that don't have archaeological.
Yeah, I like that.
It's getting more challenging as well.
Yes.
And then I think Jamie brought this up, reviewing the options to potentially extend the site plan and preliminary plat approval. Jamie, does that sound, is that in your court? I think.
What's the current state rule now? What is it? Did they drop it back down to 7?
It drops down to 7, and then it'll be 5 to 7.
Right. And it goes back to 5 at some point, some set date?
Year. Some of 30 years.
The city of Vancouver has some decent language in there. So they allow extensions, but you have to meet certain criteria.
We have extensions as well.
Yeah.
But isn't that only on phase projects? Huh?
Yeah.
But so they have it for non-phased.
Right.
Well. Oh, they do?
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
They allow up to 2 1-year extensions, I think.
Yeah, so we could look at that language.
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah, I mean, if it's working in other places.
Yeah, their first one's a type 1, I believe, and then they go to a type 2 if you push for a second extension. So,
that's something that I think, you know, during the recession it was obviously more important, but now a lot of the ways we're doing this is through development agreements. And just practically speaking, I know a lot of jurisdictions are wanting benchmarks associated with getting extensions. I think that that's pretty reasonable. You don't want just to pretend and extend.
Is that a new catchphrase?
Pretend and extend.
Or extend.
Get your trips vested, get your approval list.
Yeah,
sit there.
Only an attorney.
He just went to.
Not anymore.
Get them done. Yeah.
So that's the list of items that I have in my notes and Mike and I agreed on from last conversation last month. I don't know if any of the VEED members have identified anything else that they think is kind of on that top action item list. Or Marty or Mark, if you guys have items that you think, you know, you have a great interest in us trying to pursue, open to those.
There's some kind of things that have recently come up on my end. I'd like to revisit the Highway 99 code. There's things, some minor tweaks that could clarify some things and make life a lot easier from a site design standpoint. Marty and I have talked a little bit offline about that. We'll come up with that. Find some time to.
We said that. When things got slow.
Yeah.
We're only 2 years behind.
I think you said in November.
I didn't give a year though, did I? Did I say November?
I've heard that. Don't ever say that. I've heard the saying when things calm down.
Well, I think actually we're looking at the holiday, but
yeah.
Things did not slow down during the holiday. Oh my goodness.
You're right.
Crazy. Mm-hmm. Crazy.
They're worse.
Yeah. So I don't know if the members have any other items other than that. The monitoring item list is things that we've been hit on or that we continue to talk about in terms of customer service and wait times. Jeff working on the site plan and flat process improvements. I did have one item. Item 4 on that monitoring item list is related to the fee holiday and sort of our continued pursuit of whether that process is meeting the goals, I guess. It's been a topic that we've talked about
whether the program. It's not our job to determine that.
No.
And that's.
Yeah, there's some work underway on the fee waiver program. I know our auditor's office is going to do a follow-up to the audit that they did initially.
We did get an update on that.
Yeah.
That's why we kind of left it on this.
It's just monitoring.
Look at that.
Yeah, and Jeff Swanson has, we've entered into a sort of an interlocal agreement with employment security to get detailed jobs data. by jurisdiction so that this phenomenal growth rate we're seeing in jobs, we can determine with great accuracy where those jobs are being created, whether they're in Battleground or Camas or Vancouver or whether they're in the unincorporated area. Because if we have a fee waiver program and our job creation rate is lower than the city's, what does that tell
right.
you?
Right.
And I know that the new board will be very interested in looking at ways to make that program more effective. Do we want minimum wage jobs or do we want family wage jobs? Do we want high tech or do we want retail? Things of that sort. Do you give a $2 million fee waiver to Walmart or Fred Meyer when they're going to build anyway? So those questions are all on the table. And Julie, you got anything you want to say about that? I mean, Councillor Olson.
I think Mark summed it up pretty well. We're looking forward to getting some additional data, real data, more on a more granular level, so we can really see what the program has done, what the accomplishments are. And, you know, from my perspective, it's really just about reviewing the program, and if it did accomplish what the intent was, and if it didn't, that's okay. Let's just go back and take a look at other possibilities that might give us what we're really looking for. So we just really want to get some more granular data and
So my point in bringing that up is sort of a question whether that's even still a monitoring item. I wasn't trying to move that into the active pursuit, but I didn't want to rub anybody that's been rubbed enough already.
Well, it may not be in your active task bucket, but it's in the county's.
Yeah. I say we leave it there and we'll get an update on it.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think to the extent that it has a bearing on transportation issues, which I think is a pretty huge issue, that planning for transportation in particular, 2 years ago we were talking about decreases and driving around the county now, it's pretty crowded. It's getting, I mean, that's a good thing, but it's congested. So what does that mean 5 years from now? Capital facility issues are really critical.
Just one more comment. I hate to belabor this, but when I look at the bylaws and what the duties of this board are, it's not to make policy decisions.
Right.
We follow the lead and we advise on the, and more on the technical impact side of it. I think we've done our job.
Yeah,
I think it should drop off completely.
But I think if the board is revisiting it and potentially looking at policy changes associated with it, that may very well fall back in our lap as something we should
agreed
review.
Yep.
So we
it may
on
come
the monitoring back. List because we know that there is still activity on it, probably isn't a bad idea. It shouldn't be on the active list though.
Maybe a quick comment on the monitoring item. It's just a language item, just on number 10.
Yeah.
I want to give kudos to staff and to the Commit Center. They have reduced the center times and the appointment time has been a godsend.
Mm-hmm.
So just so the new board understands that maybe striking the word reducing or put like continuing to reduce. We're characterizing it correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah. They continue to monitor staff's efforts about reducing.
I got to throw them a bone.
I will add to that. I'm just, good.
Make it a drumstick and not a wing, okay?
Well, I think that, and it's, things have come up along the way that have allowed, you know, people like us to simply just get in there and drop stuff off. We don't have a fee to pay. We are just dropping off updated plans. We can work with the planner or the planning tech or, you know, even the counter there will take something. And that's real handy. They used to do that before, then they got away from doing it. Now they're back to doing it. So it's real handy to just be able to go in there and say, hey, I just emailed thus and such. Here's what I'm dropping off. They log it in. It literally takes 2 minutes and we're out of there.
Without taking a number and taking a seat? Just do it?
In those instances, no. Just recently, it was, just drop it off at the front counter, had an email. It said, sure, I'll take it in. Here's your receipt. You're out the door.
Okay, what if you have something more complex? Are you using the appointment? You have appointments.
If it's a formal application or a fee has to be paid, then yes, we do have to do that.
And is that appointment system working for
it's
you?
It's awesome. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, there's another bone. That's a breastbone.
I was singing the praises to Councillor Gold today. And with certain staff members being able to make their own appointments is real handy too.
As opposed to some central point?
Yes.
That has to
yes.
Clearinghouse kind of thing?
Right.
We have more staff in the permit center, if anybody's noticed. We've got, I think, three or four new people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, your desks are being filled.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that theme appears in here, too, about staffing in a number of places.
Yeah.
And so.
Number eight.
So that was really all I wanted to hit on in terms of monitoring items. The rest of these are sort of ongoing things. I know the stormwater ordinance, we're going to be watching how that gets implemented, certainly those of us that are engineers and planners.
Thank you.
So unless there's further comments on that, the other piece, I've got a draft work plan here. I see that we're kind of up against the time that we reserved for this. Really, I think, I just tried to paraphrase kind of what we went through over the last year, and probably as much as anything, if the B members could review that, see if I missed something major, see if I got some grammar errors or whatever else, to help clean this up before we do sit down with the counselors, or if Marty, if you see anything. But I tried to kind of briefly go through sort of the actions of the year here, so that could be something that we can talk about now, or if you guys just want to email me if you've got any comments on that as well.
So could you characterize 2015 if you were to think of a trend on how the county's doing, how responsive we are to your suggestions, the improvements that we made? Are we on an upward curve, or are we flat, are we declining?
My take on last year was we were a bit reactive on some issues, I'd say, and 11th hour reactive.
Yeah, that is one of the items, I think, in here that was in last year's work plan, maybe was about trying to get in front of some of these potential code changes, maybe be aware a little bit more in advance, and I know one of those, or two of those, would have been the HOC code revisions that came forward, the
home business,
home
business.
And the proposed changes to the, higher density residential to exclude detached single family residences.
Right.
Those kind of were like, whammo, here you go, here's a code. It's going to planning commission tonight.
Well, I will say though, we've identified mutual concerns, mm-hmm. like the final plat process, for instance. Staff has been absolutely fantastic, and the collaboration has been, it's like, from my planning commission background, it's so much more fun because you can actually make some changes on the ground and see where they're actually helping, and Nikki and Angie and everyone's been doing great. So when we identify those areas where we can collaborate, it's great. It's identifying those and agreeing on the collaboration and getting it moving forward.
Okay. I think regarding the code revisions, I think with this new board, our process, I think, will be different. My hope is that if a counselor has a code revision or a particular area of the code that they're interested in looking at and changing, that'll be brought to the full board to see if there's support from other counselors to do that work. And then if that work is agreed upon, then it'll be assigned to the appropriate staff to do the research and to draft documents that would come back. And then as part of that process, you would, I guess, be included.
Yeah, it's going to be a more deliberative process.
It'll be more deliberative. I don't think it'll move quite as quickly in some cases as it's moved in the past. So I think that we can improve on that going forward.
So with what Jeff said, though, I'll echo his comments. When we have areas that we can work on together, and the key is to bring a smaller group together so that within literally 6 to 8 weeks, you can identify the issues, kind of brainstorm some solutions and then trial them and test them and then put them into production, we can make improvements within a couple months. And they that might seem long, but the impact of those changes help considerably in the long run. So I want to thank the folks of this group and people who they bring in, kind of the experts and these kind of strike forces, these tasks, you know, very like a task force to work on something. That's the best way you can work on these things. You get a larger group that may or may not have the interest or the expertise, that becomes unwieldy, it drags out longer, and so on and so forth. So when we've had those strike teams put together, we do a lot of good things.
Yeah, no, I echo kind of what James said, that we're somewhat reactive this last year. Part of it was there was a fairly steady stream of topics that were worthy of a discussion. Part of it, honestly, I know I was very busy, and I think a lot of our board members were very busy with our day jobs.
Sure.
As well.
Yeah. What do you know?
But Marty's absolutely right. We had, I know Jeff and his work with some staff members on the plat, trying to figure out how to optimize that. It was really productive. I think we had some good stormwater conversations. And I think the collaboration with staff's been good in terms of trying to figure out how to improve.
I would echo that, Mark. And that I think the impediment has been the volume in the county has picked up. The industry, which is all good for all of us,
yeah.
The development business has picked up, and staffing levels were still at another recession levels. That was a big struggle. But the willingness, the tone, the desire to find solutions has never been better.
Excellent.
Okay. It's been tough to find staff.
All right.
I was going to say, it's been tough to find staff.
The staff.
We're fighting the same thing.
It's a challenge.
It's a challenge to find good people right now.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's a challenge to find a body.
It's a challenge. It's crazy. I don't know where they are. But
in schools, though.
It's down in porn. These guys need to hire more people. To the extent that you can find the right person.
It's been really appreciated having, when there is an issue that we bring up as a group, having Chuck or, you know, talk about the building department and planning building and how that process is going. Storm drainage issues are similar, but just having those folks here at the table explaining what they're trying to do. I think 2015 was really a framework year of trying to implement further progress for the county. Mm. I think in many ways it's been very successful. Very pleased that staff is continuing to hire more folks to keep up with that, because we were talking about that several years ago, and now that really is a critical point for the county. So.
Okay. And this technology that Marty's implementing,
exactly.
I think.
And that's huge. The city's struggling with their technology. They just bought a few years back. So,
oh, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, they have some challenges with that technology. So it's great to see you guys doing that.
It's interesting. I met with Eric Holmes earlier today, and we were talking about that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You can do electronic plan submissions and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then there's workflow inside the city. And it sounded really good when he presented it to me. But you.
Well, the data, I'm just talking about, you know, people kind of inputting stuff at the counter. I mean, it's just that's the test point. It's like, can they be more efficient when they input the stuff at the counter? And that's kind of the telltale sign.
Yeah. Electronic plan review is a holy grail.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, I appreciate the feedback. Thank you.
So, Mark, we're...
So Marty gets to stay around.
Where Deeb works more directly with you, do you still want to have the annual report done in a work session with the board setting, or what's your preference there?
Well, the board created you. It sounds like you got some good things to say. I think they value the work you do, and... yeah, I'd support you having a work session.
Okay. I'll work with Rebecca then to set that up. And
are you all okay with that?
They ask some good questions. They listen well, but they also ask some good questions. And they challenge us as a group, as a board, to be able to, you know, this is going back to what Andrew said. Last year was reactionary. I think we're going to be more proactive this year.
Okay, and if you throw the examples out there, there's one particular person at the table who's going to go.
Understood.
Yeah.
I don't have to give it this year, so.
So, as far as I'm concerned, if you guys could just look over our kind of report.
Andrew, when you meet with Marty and Mark, I'd like to be part of that.
Thank you, Andrew.
I think the report, if you want to look it over,
okay.
It's more informational probably for you. Okay. Marty's more familiar day to day with things, but as a group, I want to make sure there's a recipe to just kind of look it over and make sure I didn't miss things.
If I have any report, I'll give it to you early next week.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, I think you've gotten through the agenda items that I was most interested in.
Mark, thank you for coming.
Okay, thanks for all your work.
Thank you.
I'll be back.
All right, there goes your answer.
Next on the agenda, Ali, you're going to come up and talk about corner lots, driveway locations, site distance.
Okay, I have a handout for you. The first page is a code. There are two sections of the code that I highlighted. One is the spacing of the driveway with respect to the intersection for the corner lots. And the code requires that the nearest edge of the driveway at the intersection be located 50 feet from the intersecting property line, and then 5 feet from the property line farthest from the intersection. So that's the standard. I actually did not include an exhibit that explains how you meet that requirement. So I'll pass it around. It's not in your packet, so I apologize for that if you could pass.
Oh, sure.
It's just one page. So this exhibit shows how the code is can be met, actually. So you have 50 feet from the intersecting property line, which is the right of way to the north here, or to the, And then if you have 12-foot driveway, just as an example, and then 5 feet from the property line, you would need a minimum of 67 feet of lot width. It is tough,
yeah.
No doubt about it. So this is how you need it, and 12-foot driveway is not going to work for anybody.
Yeah.
So I just created this just to show how the code can be met. Any expansion or increasing the driveway, it has to increase the width of the lot. So if you add another 10 feet, your log width would be 87 and on and on and on. So you have to keep moving this line if you want to have to drive the, just to perfectly meet the code.
Current code, right?
Yeah, current code.
But that's sort of relatively recent, is it not?
No, what happened was there were some builders who approached the board, and when Pete Capel was here, and we went to the board, and we tried to compromise by saying if you don't meet the 50 feet, you start from 5 feet from the property line and go only 20 feet maximum. Wherever that puts you is okay.
Yes.
So that's what we did as a code revision.
20 feet maximum on the driveway width?
Right.
Ali?
Right.
Okay.
So yeah, we said, you know, you can violate the 50 feet, but don't come, I mean, don't have a 30 feet right there. It was, we were holding people to do 12, because we would say we have to give you a driveway, but in order to have more spacing, we allow only 12, unless we do a road mark. And then we figured out there is not really good justification for roadmap except that, you know, the builders, you know, asked to sell homes and, you know, it was more economic and it wasn't addressing the code. So we came up with, I'm sorry, go ahead.
So you're saying you're only 12 or 20?
No, now it's 20.
Now it's
20. Yeah, we said, okay, if you want to not do the 50 feet,
right,
all you allow is 20.
Okay.
Now we are having some challenges. That, you know, we want a three-car garage and we want the 30 foot, but again, you know, the wider driveway you have, the closer you are, you know, into the intersection. So I included another exhibit that shows why this code is written the way it is, and that's this page. I'm sorry, I didn't put the exhibit number. There is a car backing out of the driveway.
There
so is. The closer you are, the less chance for the people who want to turn that. People usually back into the street. And if there is not enough warning, enough space for the people who are coming around, although they are going slow, but still they need to see somebody's backing out and be able to stop on time before they get anywhere. So this is why this code is the way it is.
Just to clarify, so sure. Someone has a 20-foot apron at the street, that can widen back out to a three-car garage, but what access is onto the street
20 feet.
Has to be 20 feet.
Exactly. The bottom width of the driveway 20, once they get outside of the approach, you can widen out to, you know, as wide as you want.
So that's the throat too, not the wings.
Yeah,
so
the bottom throat. Of the throat.
Yeah, so you can have the wings extended even a little bit further.
The wings have to meet the ADA if it's that sidewalk. You know, right. 5 feet usually, but sometimes, you know, you have to extend it further to get 8.3 percent grade.
Yeah.
So but this 20 is the width of the bottom. So the nearest edge of the bottom needs to be, you know.
So all the we can do the math on a small lot subdivision for example.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I think you included, this one here shows 28 feet.
Right.
Is this a real life example that would be allowed?
It is, because we do have that on R18, R20. We have a little issue, you know, conflict with the planning code that allows this small lot development, very, you know, small width.
So
we have to give them an access.
I don't think 28 is realistic, because you figure if you have a 4 or 5 foot side yard, and then most of the time you have a 10 foot street side yard.
In the corner,
right. Then you're getting down to like a 13 foot wide unit.
But in his example,
yeah,
28 feet would be technical.
Right. Okay.
Is the minimum. It would be allowed.
Understood.
Under this.
And this would be. I believe that you can still do townhomes that have individual lot, but you attach four of them.
Right.
So the nearest edge of the right way to that, you know, first lot maybe. But anyway, it's an example.
Okay.
So
sure.
So is this current language earlier?
This
proposed?
Is the current language. Yeah. Actually, I have a proposal which I will talk about at the end if I make that. So. One reason is the cars backing out, and the farther they are from the intersection, the safer it is. The second thing is when the driveway is too close to the intersection and you have a van or a large SUV, most likely you're going to be in the intersection, in the side distance triangle, and people won't see what's going on. A kid could be playing. There could be a lot of scenarios. So that's another reason. I'll get to the side distance triangle later. But it's because they are kind of interrelated with the driveway spacing, you know, at the intersection. So and just to show. No, actually, I'll cover the ASHTO and MUTCD later. So that's what I have for the reason for the setback for the driveway from intersection. If you don't have any question, I'll move on to the second.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm not an expert on it. I passed out, and I sent you the issue that
you
the
did.
Homes shot
yeah.
up.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I saw that planners and engineers all grabbed them. Which is good, because you guys probably understand it better than I do.
Sure.
But what is the situation that they're... So what they're claiming is that this is something they've been allowed to do in the past, and now they have a buyer, and now they're being told they can't do it.
Do what been allowed to do, they can't do it.
That it hasn't been enforced, and now it's being enforced.
What has... The driveway?
The driveway. That, exactly. The way that they've been proposing it to do
they are proposing, the way they're proposing to do it is something that's been allowed up until very recently.
To bring 30 feet down to, all the way down to the curb?
Rather than 20 feet.
Rather than 20 feet and then coming back down.
You know, they said they've been allowed to do that on the ground or something.
It is possible, you know, it's possible when it comes to us, we are supposed to be the expert. I mean, it is possible that in some inspectors, you know, don't really.
Right.
You know, I don't mean to point fingers.
No, that's right.
But an inspector may say, yeah, I mean, three-car garage, I mean, 30 feet is just fine. Not really knowing all the whole issues. Once we review the subdivision and we plan it, we are kind of out of it, unless we are contacted, you know, for some reason. Nowadays, I think the permit services people, when they want to approve the plot plan for the single family homes, they do look at this. They are more aware of what's going on. But I would not doubt that there are things many of them done.
Right.
Either the plot, I mean, the plot plan was okay back then in the field, somebody allowed it, or even on the plot plan, you know, they didn't know that the driveway is extending into the, you know, setback area.
Yeah, see, builders don't follow, I mean, they try to follow the code, but they don't follow all the changes and the nuance. They get used to doing something on the ground, and then they get hit with something that they think that they've been allowed to do in the past, and then it's like the rules have changed on.
Sure. To be honest with you, I totally understand the hardship.
Oh, yeah, I know you do. Yeah. I know you do. Like, your response was fine, and I think that's...
Yeah, and I sympathize at the same time when it comes to us. We have no way to vary from this, you know. And like I said in the email in response, that you still can do a road knock.
Right.
But you have to have a justification. At the same time, the code, the road knock code clearly says creating your own hardship is not a justification.
Right, it sounds like a road mod would be difficult to,
right,
to obtain.
Right. So just for my information, do you see any problem with 20 foot width off the bottom of the driveway and then expanding it as much as you want on the lot?
I don't really have to if have that's that, a
such a large approach.
It's just people want to build three-car garages, especially in the next.
But they don't want to kind of maneuver.
Yeah, and it's here's the reality. Here's the way they see it. They're going to see it as, I'm just going to drive over the curb. So what's the difference?
Right.
I mean, they're going to do, I mean, I kind of do it here. You do a three-car garage, you're just going to drive right over the way.
Put some blocks down there.
And why is that different? Why can't I just pour that thing where it actually works?
Sure.
So that's their just that's
sure,
what they're thinking.
The other side of that might be, does 10 feet make that much of a difference from a safety standpoint?
Yeah. Actually, my proposal is at the end of the discussion to see if we can form some type of a, you know, committee or group and sit down to see what the options are. We've done this like a few times over the years with Steve Shorty, you know. We've been to the board and back several times, you know. It's been an issue as long as I've been working for the county, and that's almost 16 years.
I think that's what you're recommending. I think that's a fantastic recommendation.
So I think a few people from guys who have newly come in, and couple of counties, that maybe one from our group, one from transportation, because they end up, you know, inheriting what we need. And so if we can all sit down and
if there's a way to compromise where we can still meet the safety standards and the ASHTO and everything else, but if we can't do it, we can't do it. But if there's a way to compromise and get clarity, that would be great. And I think having, you know, obviously a couple of other representatives, probably, you know, superintendents or something that are actually dealing with this stuff on the ground, or, you know, say, you know, people that are actually. Because there are customers in this particular case. I think Utah ended up losing the sale on because the customer really didn't. They had an expectation of what a three-car garage driveway should look like. You know, they just, it's Vancouver.
With the wings a little bit wider, you can basically make it function the same way.
Yeah.
It's just kind of selling it to them so they know what to expect.
Exactly.
And I think there has been a lot of, like, the interpretation, when it used to be 12 feet, none of the inspectors followed it. The building department didn't follow it. It just didn't make sense. It wasn't even reasonable to be 12 feet. And you have a three-car garage coming to a 12-foot deck. So I think what happened is nobody followed it. It didn't make any sense.
That's why we did.
And now with this one, they're still probably not following it exactly.
The difficulty on the ground, though, and you look at the effect, like you said, it's tough. When you're doing a subdivision and you're working with those corner lots, and you're also working with a 5,000, you know, 6,000 square foot lot, I mean, 67 is huge. I mean, you're losing a lot in there somewhere.
And that's
and probably more on your corners, because if you're having to make those wider to make more, you're losing lots on the interior. If it's not necessary, then otherwise we're shooting ourselves in the foot for density and everything else that we're trying to talk about.
I'm just wondering if there's other tools, though, that you can use, like traffic calming.
Signs. I'll cover that too. Okay. Decide this stuff triangle about the stop sign, which was requested, I believe, and the transportation has issues, and I tell you why. Do you want to discuss?
Can I make one more interpretation before I move on?
Sure.
So there's another language in here about the joint use driveway.
Right.
So I'm going to try to sketch it out here. But what if they do a driveway here, and then they do one large driveway for this whole thing?
Sure.
Is there a limit on that size, or can you go 30 and 30 then?
You mean 25 and 20?
Well, actually, it doesn't.
It's 25 and 25, if you want to.
25 and 25 in that situation.
All right.
So actually, you can go 25 and then 30 on this one, though, couldn't you? Because this one's not a corner.
Actually, that one can be as wide as you want.
So you could go.
Oh, I'm sorry, 35 is the maximum.
So you could go to joint use.
So even if you do the joint, 35 is the maximum.
35,
yeah.
Right.
But 35 could save both lots.
But on the one on the corner, this one's going to be 25, this one would be 35.
You couldn't combine them to have this 55 foot
right.
Driveway.
Yeah, the code says residential driveway, and doesn't say joint driveway can be more. It says it has to be 12 feet.
But there might be a compromise on the set.
Okay.
Unless we put something in the code to say in case of,
So again, kind of going to the interpretation, I know the 5 foot spacing here was based on the ADA, you able to come up with your wings and come back down.
Right.
Well, if you never come up and you never go back down, you just abut the two driveways.
Right.
Can you get more? So could you do 25 then and then 35 then?
Yeah, that requires negotiation or having the whole thing built at one time.
We
have
or
to get the neighbor, If the builder is building both, we have seen that before, and we have not asked.
And you showed on class that that's where the driveway is going to go, that's a joint use, there's a joint use driveway.
A lot of buyers don't,
they don't want to share.
They don't like sharing.
And then you have the issue with the water being water and having a rated layer, utilities, and that
because
same
sounds like a work session, work group.
You were out of the room when Ali was saying that he would like to establish a small working group of builders and people from the county to kind of take a look at the solutions. The builders I deal with, including ourselves, would be interested in sitting down and seeing what we can work out.
Sure.
And or knowing the rules, just knowing what they, if they are, then if these are the rules and we have to follow them, then both builders and developers need to understand that we're going to be putting lots on the ground that are really difficult for people.
You know, the challenge is the density that you mentioned, right?
The
density of affordable housing.
Right. We do have a little, conflict between safety and transportation and what planning and zoning.
I understand.
Corner lots have become a bit of a pariah in terms of trying to sell them, and part of it is because of the sight line.
They used to be popular.
They used to be very popular. Yeah. They did. People bigger. Used to like corner lots. Now it's
no
name.
Corner
lots were bigger.
That's become. But if you're willing to do that, I think that's.
No, actually, I think we should and we could. As far as whether this is written stone or not, it is not. There are some guides from Ashto that dictates all this. That's where they come from. So we have to be looking at that because again, if there is an accident, most likely they are gonna question why didn't you use the widely accepted guideline that Ashto. Although Ashto doesn't say the jurisdiction shall do this or that.
No.
But there's...
But we are still obligated to have some type of a standard and not shoot from the hip.
But maybe some traffic calming or something. I mean, there may be some ideas.
Yeah, and I talked about the stop sign water on set. So moving on to the...
No,
the site distance.
I already covered it.
Triangle.
Already covered it? Yeah, done. Oh. Yeah.
What am I waiting for?
Yeah.
Already. I have two exhibits.
Yeah. It went fine. It was good.
Cool. Great. Thank you. Site distance and vision clearance.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Thank you, Marty.
Thank you, Marty.
Thanks for coming.
I got your email. Yes.
What?
Get together.
Okay, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So the second section I highlighted for the code is site distance triangle for uncontrolled intersections. Those are intersections in the neighborhood that nobody stops for the other.
Yep.
So everybody's free to go. The code requires that you would draw a sight line that is part of a triangle that has 80 foot by 80 foot. And the exhibit, I have two exhibits. One shows an urban neighborhood intersecting a collector, intersecting a local, and then there is one local. The width of the local street is 28 feet. Neighborhood circulatory is 36 feet. Just because of the location of the cars and the spacing is gonna be a little different the way you draw this up. This will, as you can see, will cut into the corner and no obstruction would be allowed, whether it's vegetation, anything that obstruct the site distance or any part of the structure has to be outside.
And what's the height of that? You can have up to 3 feet or?
Usually it's, it's about 30 inches.
30 inches, okay.
Yeah. So, but I've heard from some builders that on a small narrow lots, this would cut into the building footprint. And so this is another issue that have always been an issue.
And the urban collector and the urban local residential access, are they about the same? They appear, the sight line is a little smaller.
Yeah. And
the 80 feet is the same.
Yeah, the 80 feet is the same, but since you have wider road, right, that triangle pushes out a little bit.
This is a circulator to a circulator. This is a local access to a local access.
Correct.
Right. Oh, okay.
Here's the example I should have used.
So it's self-corrected because of the width.
I've seen that before. Right. Yeah, so... this is huge, the impact on that lot. But again, you know, if you want to go by this code,
can I pass this around on the...
Yeah. This have it hard time with this lot. Oh, you passed it. Wow.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Oh, that's so this is just a point of reference on lots 31, 32 rather than 5. Probably just what we covered was there. You're familiar with it. You just have a real on the ground example. Everybody got one? Yeah. Look at lots 5 and 32. Did everybody get one?
Yeah, we're looking at lot 5.
Yeah, 5 and 32, yeah.
So
there's a real on the ground example. That's an 80-foot site distance triangle. The width on lot 5 is 61 and some odd feet. On 32 is 63 and some odd feet.
Mm-hmm. And this is local access to local access.
So these are not tiny, tiny lot. Well, they're 5,500.
Yeah. Those are average, right? Or whatever. Mm-hmm.
But it's been a challenge to find a footprint that's sellable.
You're ending up with a snout house because you can't put your living space up front 10 feet from the setback. Now it has to be back behind the garage.
Right.
Which
or in line with that.
Which we don't know.
Which you don't build anymore.
Well, I mean, it's not as desirable, and it's not desirable for the county either necessarily. But aesthetically, we.
Right. And then technically, your driveway, you're going to have a car parked on the driveway. It's probably going to be in that thing anyway.
Yeah.
Right. Because there's nowhere else to put your driveway.
Right,
the lots are too, and this is actually, this is a good example, this is not an extreme one. Imagine these lots if they were 25, 30 feet wide. That's
so, you know, we can have this committee and see what we come up with, but at the end of the day, if there are no room for, you know, changing the requirement, these lots need to be wider. I understand we lose a lot.
So,
yeah, but this, well, here's a, here's this is uncontrolled, right?
Uncontrolled.
Yes. What's
the village on the plan?
Yeah. So what's a better way to do? Can you justify the environmental impacts of decreasing density, basically? So we have to spread the urban growth boundary more because we have to get rid of one lot at every intersection.
Safety conference.
It's safety.
Yeah.
Or you put in a stop sign.
Right, they don't like stop signs.
Well, lying versus, there's so many, I mean, it's a balance of some
issues.
No, I don't like them either, but.
Yeah.
I don't like this.
That's a very expensive stop sign.
That's a cheap stop sign.
Yeah. Cheap stop sign. I'd be happy to try on this one. I had thought, have a discussion with transportation. And they are having problems with it because it's local to local. If one of them was Sailorhood and Truro, then they have easier time putting a stop sign on the smaller road.
Mm-hmm.
But this being the same class, they are having a problem because if you look at your last page of the handout, it's a stop sign warrant. So if you don't need this, you could be easily sued if you put one in there and something happens. Or you end up putting one in there that nobody respects once you put too many of them. It's always been an issue. Everybody would want those stop signs. All of a sudden, every single intersection in the subdivision is a stop control.
Yes.
And over time, being a resident there, you know, you're going to go through them. Nobody's going to stop that 2 seconds.
Yeah. I like the ones in Falada on 137.
So, and we when this came up to do that and allow it, we consulted our PAs, and they said, absolutely not. You cannot put stop sign if it is, you know, not warranted. So that's another issue we have. We talked to transportation on this. They said we would have no problem if that north-south road was a neighborhood circulator. But this being of the same class, we have no justification based on the criteria to put a stop sign there. Because once you put one in there, everybody wants to have one. And over time, you end up with stopping everybody at every single intersection.
What about a yield?
Yield is covered, and that would be also, you know, you look at the first sentence of this, it says, at the intersection where a full stop is not necessary at all times, consideration should first be given to less restrictive measures such as yield signs, and then there is a standard for that. In here, I didn't cover that because.
Does that change the site distance travel or yield sign?
It would. Yeah,
the county, what would the
it would, but I don't know how much changes it would have. And that's something to discuss.
Could we look at that?
That seems like
sessions. Yeah, we could, you know, I honestly think we cannot resolve the issue in such a short time. What I suggest, you know, in a hearing, we can have that, whoever from this board.
Somebody falls fine.
Sure. you choose, and we will have a representative from development and engineering and one from transportation, and we can sit down and see how much flexibility we have. Nobody's gonna try to force this on you if there are room for, you know, for flexibility.
That'd be great, colleague.
So that's the best I can suggest. But at this, I don't have any good solution to say, okay, we change the code and we will do this and that. I'm not at that point, you know. And I'm not an expert on all the, you know, traffic, transportation issues. You know, we do apply the code. Doesn't mean that, you know, I know all, you know, A to C of everything.
Sure.
Yeah.
So is this a next step? So a committee with Ali,
Jeff.
I'd like to be on it.
Jeff? You said he'd like that as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure.
We should have an engineer on there.
Yeah. I'd be interested.
Yeah.
Okay. Eric. Great. Jerry. And then
I heard them talk about maybe somebody else from the, like a superintendent that's out there or something like that. I don't know who's gonna
buildings.
Well,
on the building side. Like,
oh, you mean from private side?
From private side. Right. Sure.
Jeff can probably help identify somebody since he's not here.
If he doesn't, I can get someone.
So you guys let me know, and just we can set up meetings. Maybe I don't know, maybe two, three. I don't think it's gonna be a very, very long process. If there is a code change, I don't know how long that's gonna take.
Right.
But if there is something that internally we can do based on what we have, it's probably gonna take a shorter time.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, I honestly don't have a really good solution for your base absent of capabilities. If you find something, we are willing to do that.
I know you are. This is just an example, and it's not the reason we're here. But thank you for your willingness to, in general, to discuss and to find solutions.
Yeah, and we can also, on your case, start at the ES. Maybe we should talk to transportation outside of this.
But I think your emphasis is for well, this is a bigger picture. Issues resolved, and we can work down specifics.
Right. Because whatever we do, we have to consistently apply for all the people out there.
So would you mind being the lead on that piece of that to coordinate that to Spirit?
All right. So who am I contacting?
That would be Jeff.
If you let me know who would be interested, we'll send them invitation and set up meeting.
I will send you an email with the list of people.
Okay. So Jeff and Eric, Ali. Terry, want to be on that?
Sure.
Terry,
Thank you, Terry.
Great. I think that's a good group.
So, Ali, I'll send you that email.
Okay, that sounds good.
That's half of us.
Yeah. I'll set it up as soon as I get the news.
Ali, you'll get somebody from traffic on there too, right?
Yeah, one from transportation. Okay. Definitely. Whoever Matt Lee's work suggests. It could be him. It could be Matt himself. I don't know.
I can ask
somebody else from this group for sure.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you. Any other question?
Thank you. Now down to public comment, and since we don't have anybody in the audience.
Congratulations, Don.
This is the first meeting, okay. So we are adjourned.
Great. Thank you.
Welcome aboard, Don.
Thank you.
Yeah, good job. And look at
Rosie, thank you.
You knew this was coming, right?
I did. Well, it was actually, like, you're talking about going to the website of the county all the time while I was just perusing it.
Well,
I didn't realize my name was actually on there.